Hey everybody, and welcome back to From Complex to Queens, Amazing Avenue's minor league podcast. I'm Steve Seipel, and I'm joined this week by Lucas Vlahos and Ken Levin and Thomas Henderson. We are living in a post-no-hitter world. How are you guys doing today?
That was a very fun game, in my honest opinion.
That it was.
I like Jerry Blevins. I don't understand the argument that this does not count as a no-hitter.
Yeah, that's just like, I don't know. It's 2022. No one's throwing full nine
innings. If you want to make an argument that a single pitcher no-hitter has more juice, yeah, absolutely it does.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
still a no-hitter!
I agree it has more juice, for sure.
That,
but
it absolutely does.
You can't that's just taking away from like what everyone did there. And also it's cool that Mets prospect legend Tyler McGill was the one to do it and not like DeGrom or Scherzer or some shit like that. You know? Mm-hmm. But yeah, I don't know.
Also the Mets can only wear the black jerseys at home now. Those are the rules. I don't make them.
Yeah, I mean, listen, one game, one no hitter, so.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's hard to argue with the results.
If these trends continue. All right, so promote extend trade. And on this date back in 1920, the first Major League Negro League game took place between the American Giants and the Indianapolis ABCs. And Indianapolis won 4-2. And the Negro National League at last from 1920 to 1931, and then it was replaced by a second league of the same name. A little bit later, the Negro American League was formed. That lasted till the 60s, when obviously there was enough widespread integration in baseball to make the Negro Leagues unnecessary. We got to see some of the greats of the Negro Leagues play in Major League Baseball, but we didn't get to see everybody. Not everybody got their due. So, who are we going to promote extend trade of these players that were Negro League greats that never got to play in Major League Baseball? Who would we want to see?
Okay.
First is obviously the best, Josh Gibson. I mean, I'm trying not to skew things here, but yeah. Josh Gibson is Josh Gibson. Next, we have the best pitcher in Negro League's history, Smokey Joe Williams. And last but not least, is a guy who played all over the place, has stats from multiple continents, has been enshrined in multiple Hall of Fames in multiple countries, and was an excellent pitcher and hitter, Martin DeHigo.
Oh, that's okay. You made it a little tougher.
Yeah, that's
I tried to go the best hitter, the best pitcher, and a guy who was literally great at both.
He was like the Shohei before Shohei, you know, to put it in the best modern baseball terms. And that's like one of the coolest baseball players ever, Shohei, you know. That's a tough one.
Smokey is a good nickname. I'm tempted to make that the extend based purely on the name factor. I will admit my knowledge of the Negro Leagues is less than it should be and less than I would like.
Hopefully with integration stuff, they celebrate it more because it deserves to be celebrated. It might be still Josh Gibson first for me just because he was probably the best player in those leagues for the longest amount of time and never got a shot, you know?
Yeah, that's who I was going with. Yeah.
Like, he's the one guy people are like, I wish he had a shot at the majors because it would have been, he deserved it, basically, you know?
Mm-hmm. That's fair.
I'm going with Gibson, DeHigo, and Smokey Joe. Nothing against Smokey Joe, of course.
Yeah, Smokey Joe, man, come on.
It's just he's a victim of circumstance, Lucas.
What happened to good baseball player nicknames? We just all decided we're not doing that anymore.
Unfortunately.
Ugh.
That leaves us up to us, you know. That's why we have the Big Derp and the Oomph and the Oompa Loompa.
I forgot about Oompa Loompa.
Oompa Loompa's help.
Oh, now it's back in my head. The rest of the pod. Thank you, Ken.
Yup.
Doing the Lord's work. the original thing I wanted to do here was players that just never got to play in Major League Baseball, and I couldn't think of a great third. But here's a very tough secondary question here. Who would you rather have, Josh Gibson or Sadaharu Oh?
That's a good one.
Ooh.
Gibson was a catcher, so that might skew it a little bit, just for if we're talking about positional advantage, you know? Like, Oh was a first baseman or an outfielder? Something like that?
Mm-hmm. Outfield, I think.
That's, yeah, like, off the top of the dome for me. I'm not looking it up. But I feel like it's one of those two. But, I mean, if you're going to get that hitting production from catcher, I guess it's hard to argue, you know?
I mean, based on year, though, like, if you want...
Sure,
I guess,
yeah
like,
true.
Against the store, like, if you can transport them and adjust to normal or adjust to modern day, then, yeah, take the catcher. But if we're just taking on true talent, the more recent player is probably better. But in terms of fun, I think both would have been... I mean, I love the Japanese hitting style, so I might be partial to O. Just because it looks so different. And I don't know that the Negro Leagues necessarily had a hitting style that was that's as distinctly different as the Japanese one is from the Western style.
I don't even know if we have any videos of Gibson.
Yeah.
Obviously, we have pictures, but I'll look into that later, because now I'm actually interested.
That really is wild how, like, that league has survived through, like, word of mouth alone at this point, you know?
Yeah, that's one thing that, like, obviously it's unfortunate that the Negro Leagues were always... it was unfortunate that there had to be Negro Leagues to begin with because of, you know, segregation in Major League Baseball. It's also unfortunate that so much of that history has been lost unintentionally just because, you know, like, you have a box score of a game and nobody places, you know, that much importance on it, and it just kind of gets lost to history.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
On the flip side of that, though, it's cool that that has had an effect on the game by just making it so mystical. So it romanticizes it almost, if you know.
And that's how important that league was to people.
Yeah.
That, like, we have kept it in the public eye for so long, despite it being really, like, we have like 20 games of box scores and we don't even know really where these games counted. And like, you know, like, there's so much we don't know about the Negro Leagues, and also they've stayed alive and in its importance because they are really important.
Mm-hmm. All right. Now we'll move on to our way too early draft update, which is really not way too early anymore. We're starting to get into just a little early now.
It's it's 3 months now. I still have to adjust to the fact that the draft is in July.
Yeah, it's weird.
It's going to be so weird for players and stuff too when, like, they come into when the Mets draft them, whoever they draft.
Can I say I kind of hate it just in terms of the year calendar, because at the end of July you have, like, the trade deadline. So there's already stuff going on.
Yeah,
it was nice to have the draft in June. It's like, all right, now we're getting into the obviously, how to describe this? Like, there's a lot of fun. Like, it's fun to watch games, but June to July used to be, like, the most transactionally fun time of the year.
Yeah,
it's like, all right, draft, trades, waivers, contenders, blah, 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 blah. But now it's all, like, mashed together.
It was a little problematic with the NCAA College World Series and everything happening simultaneously with the draft, but I would prefer it that way because, like you're saying, it was more fun. There was more time for players to get actually in and play, you know.
At the same time, though, like, you had – I mean, I understand that it's happening at the same time as the college – this is a really long tangent. I'm sorry.
Okay.
I understand that it happening at the same time as the College World Series is a problem for the production value because, like, the top guys wouldn't be there or whatever, and they want this to be like the NFL draft, which it will never be, but whatever. But, like, the one I always remember is Dansby Swanson getting picked first overall, and then his teammates, like, going freaking nuts on the field at Vanderbilt.
Yeah,
I think after the College World Series game they were in, and that was really awesome to see come up on ESPN. So I don't know, I'm being a crank.
There are pros and cons.
I also really liked it for, like, I remember when the Mets drafted Alonso. I just watched all the Florida games from then. Because I was like, oh, cool. Like, now there's an actual investment for me. Like, because I went to a small liberal arts D3 college, you know, like I don't have like college sports rooting investments. Mm-hmm. I just watch it really for the college, for the sports of it. But I remember as soon as I met Schefter, I was like, oh, Florida's playing like tomorrow, you know? And I was like, oh, cool. I could watch the Mets second round pick because he's technically a Met, you know, and he's technically still in Florida. I always found that pretty cool that like there was an overlap there and there was kind of a reason for fans to tune in to those. More of a reason if you're not a college sports fan.
Yeah, I completely agreed. I'm the same boat. I don't have like vested rooting interests in any team. So to see players like, okay, this is a guy I should be rooting for now, it is better for the product, the college, you know, the college product.
I think Justin Dunn was similar. Like he pitched right after the Mets.
Oh, draft. That's who I was going to bring up.
I watched like three or four of his starts.
And I watched a lot of his starts then because I was like, oh, cool. Like the Mets draft.
I'm sure Pete Alonso took him deep.
I think so. Yeah, I'm pretty sure he did.
Ken, do you guys remember Justin Dunn like blowing away Zach Collins right after they both got drafted?
Later in that game, though, Zach Collins.
Mm-hmm.
Very long dinger.
Yes. I mean, that was kind of the Justin Dunn story at the time. He'd be good for two innings, and then the velocity would go away. And
It's almost like he was a college reliever at some point.
Strange how that works out.
Funny how life works. But
now I always found that really Steve's schedule sufficiently.
That's okay. Well, I mean, we have a good free 5 minutes or so because both my guys are just injured. So, boop, that's the end of that. Lucas, Brock Porter, and Dylan Beavers.
I'll do Brock Porter first. Brock Porter had a start on the 28th. So, what was that? Today's Saturday. That was the Thursday. Six innings pitched, 15 strikeouts, one walk. He did give up two runs, so drop him down the draft board. Trash. Mets should take him in the second. I mean, I'm going to make the same comments. He's too good for high school. I don't know that we can really glean so much like from the bits of Twitter video we're seeing because those are always going to be the good things, whatever. There's a legitimate argument. There is a non-zero chance he is the first pitcher selected now.
Especially
now. Yeah, after Dylan Lesko's injury. I don't think there was any chance before. Like, if someone took Porter over a healthy Lesko, they're drunk. But with Lesko hurt, which I think we'll talk about a little bit later, Porter might be the first pitcher taken. Now, I think there's also just kind of an amalgamous group of these prep arms that you could take in any order, and there's going to be a lot of different prep factors that we're not privy to, but looks real good. Nice prep first round pitching prospect. Dylan Beavers, 3-for-9, 5 walks. The 4 of them came in a midweek game against the Garbage School.
Four
walk game.
Pretty good.
Against Pacific. I don't think I ever, as someone who did called a decent number of Cal baseball games, I don't remember ever calling a game against Pacific. Hit a home run against Oregon, struck out 4 times this week. I mean, I was always pounding the table for him as like a top of the second round guy, and now he's sneaking into the back of the first round in mocks. So it seems like teams are liking what they see. I still have a little worry about the swing and miss, but it's a nice combination of semi-polished college hitter with upside for more since he's newer to hitting than most. So, doing his thing. Patience, dingers. Just got to cut down on the swing and miss.
The patience is always impressive to me with him because, like, he's so new to the position.
Yeah.
I think that, like, he would be the opposite of that and be getting fooled by all this stuff.
Yeah, and then, like, if you want to be rosy about it, like, maybe he learns how to swing and miss less as he gets more experience. But, and I think, I think there are some suboptimalities in his swing you could fix a little bit. So, lots of reasons for optimism. If he's going to the back end of the first, he's probably not going to be a Met, but that's fine.
He is big, goes to, like, a really smart team, and they're like, do this instead. And then he's good, you know?
And so I'm mocked to the Yankees and the, I forget what the other team was, but two teams in the back of the first.
All right, Ken, how is Jace Jung doing, and how is Cam Collier doing?
Cam Collier still hasn't played, so I'm assuming his season is over.
Their season is over. That's right.
Their season is over. I think they have like 3 games or so left. He hasn't played in about 2 weeks. Not sure why, but I assume if it was something sinister, would be easier to find. So he finished his season hitting .333, .431, .525, and 162 at bats. Seven dingers, 17 extra base hits, 25 walks against 30 Ks. So pretty good season for a guy who's like 3 years younger than everybody's playing against. Jace Jung, he had an okay week. He went a measly 5-for-10, but no extra base hits, four walks, 1K. So through 45 games this year, he's hitting .373, .523, .696. So trade, he's under 700 slugging.
Damn.
That's a 1219 OPS with 11 homers, 29 extra base hits, 50 walks, and 26 Ks and 161 at-bats. So still very good. Still likely to be the top college position player taken in the draft.
Oh, yeah. All right, and Thomas, Gavin Cross, and Brandon Barea.
Barea is continuing his kind of like, I don't want to say weird season, but he didn't play. Like, he didn't pitch this week. The last time he pitched was April 19th, and he was fine pretty much. I said this in my little update, but I'll just go over it again. He struck out 11 over six, but also gave up four runs all in the sixth inning. So that might have been him running out of gas a little bit. That might have him like leaving two runners on or leaving the bases loaded or whatever and getting kind of screwed with like a reliever. It's hard to tell with high school because we're not privy to that information, really. But they played three times last week, and two of the games were very close together, like the 26th and the 28th or something like that. So I think they just are going to let him pitch the next game, I'm assuming. Like, we'll have a start to talk about for him next week. But they might be being a little careful with him because they're really good and they're going to need him more down the stretch, you know, like saving his bullets type thing. And also he's a high school kid and he's shown a little bit of sometimes he's been a little rockier than you would expect this year, but he still has, I think it's like a 2-something ERA on the season. So it's way more good than bad. And Gavin Cross is just doing his thing. Like his season numbers have basically stayed around the .335, .429, .639 that he is now. So he's been really consistent. He had that little dip where he was under 300 for like a week or so, and then he just shot that right back up. And he's been around those numbers ever since. And I just think that's kind of the hitter that he is in college, and that's a perfectly good one. You know, that's a 1,000 OPS. He is hitting he only has 9 home runs, which is a bit surprising. But it is also, though, his career high is 11 in 51 games, and he has 9 in 37, so it's not really, like, a crazy number off. But the extra base hits are 11 doubles and 5 triples as well, so that's always nice to see that it's a lot of gap-to-gap power, it seems, where he's really doing a good job of, like, hitting for power, even if it's not always a home run. And he also has 7 steals and hasn't been caught yet, so.
Oh, not bad.
Yeah, he's an interesting player because you look at 6'3", 215, and you think, like, big power-hitting plotter. But while he does that, you don't steal 5 and – I mean, steal 7 and have 5 triples without being fast. Like, the speed is there for him. So I wonder if center field could be a thing for him going forward. I think any team who drafts him would try him there just because you want the guy to be a center fielder, but we'll see. He's played center field this year. He only played one game in right, so.
Oh, there you go. All right, before we move on from the draft, we have some draft-related news that was kind of touched upon quickly. It was announced a couple of days ago that Dylan Lesko underwent Tommy John surgery. We haven't really talked too much about him in our draft coverage because, you know, he's basically out of the Mets' league. A lot of times guys will be arguably this, arguably that, but Lesko was not arguably. He was the best high school pitcher in the draft this year, period. So him getting Tommy John, it's pretty major news, and it's going to shake the draft up a bit, and the Mets are either going to be directly or indirectly impacted by it, because you know what? Now there's a chance that they possibly, potentially are able to select someone who's injured, but when healthy was the best high school pitcher in the draft class. What made him so good? Fastball, very good, low to mid-90s, a top dead around 70, 70. 97.
That would be concerning, Steven.
Yes. It looked like he threw two fastballs, a four-seamer and a two-seamer, because the four-seamer, it had some rise when it was up in the zone, and the two-seamer had some arm-side run and some sink when it was thrown low, definitely above the average to plus pitches. Change-up, set in the low 80s, had a shit ton of tumble, plus pitch. His curveball, a big upper 70s bender, it had 2,700 to 3,000 RPM of spin. Didn't always control it, but had above average potential, possibly more. The command of the fastball and the changeup were above average. Like I said, the curveball not so much, but overall above average command. Mechanics, no red flags, repeatable, you know, nothing really to dislike or think would be problematic in the future. So this was a guy that was projected by, you know, industry sources in the know to go as high as like 3 or so, and in like the 4 to 7 range. Now with the injury, obviously, probably not so much. If he drops down a couple of spots, you know, say he drops down from 4 to 7 to 8 to 14, guess what? That's in the Mets' wheelhouse because they have not one but two picks.
Man, if this was, and maybe you guys disagree, if this was literally any other team in baseball, yeah. Even if this was the Mets 2 or 3 years ago, I'd be screaming on the podcast right now about how they need to go draft Dylan Lesko, how this is an incredible opportunity to land a top 5 level talent, that Tommy John isn't a big deal. And frankly, Tommy John isn't a big deal for most of the league. It's a big deal for the Mets. They cannot rehab a Tommy John correctly for the life of them. Like, legitimately, when was the last time someone had Tommy John and came back from it okay for the Mets? Thor took 2 years and had a setback and doesn't look the same. Sapucki is broken. I won't fault them for Molina. His mechanics were always going to fuck him anyway. You go further back, Matt's had issues. Bobby Parnell's career ended. The dude they traded for, Billy Hamilton, is never the same. They can't do it.
Yeah, that would be my concern too. Is just they don't have a strong history of rehabbing this injury correctly. I mean, even Matthew Allen already had a second surgery. Like, the second surgery.
How could I forget?
Like the second surgery he had is quite common for guys who've had Tommy John, but also you don't want him to have it. You know, like, mm-hmm. Matt's had the same thing, and so did DeGrom. Like, DeGrom's, they healed. They actually did a pretty good job, and it was fine. But that was also like 12 years ago. You know, like, DeGrom had his arm, had that second surgery, like, well after his Tommy John. I think it was just happenstance that he had it. But I don't know. Like, I agree. I think having the second first round pick gives them a bit of a cushion to do this, though, where other teams don't have that. Like, whoever's picking 10 or 12, I don't remember off the top of my head, like, that's their first round pick. Like, it completely relies on if they rehab his Tommy John right. If they do, then it's a steal. And if they don't, then you've basically wasted your first round pick. The Mets pick 2-3 picks later. So if they do, knock on wood, draft him and mess it up, or not, I don't want them to mess it up. If they do draft him and mess it up, they still have a second first round pick that the draft isn't all lost. So I think that's an interesting kind of hedge that they have, like a natural hedge they have that other teams don't.
Agreed. It's, I don't know. I mean, we've seen
it's
last,
tough, though. It's
yeah.
Tough.
As we saw last year, that, you know, that maybe they don't like pitchers with potential injury issues.
We also don't know what Rocker had. Like if Rocker had something worse than Tommy John, then, like, and the Mets are denying that, then that's fine. But they know what Lesko has. Like,
yeah.
Every single person knows that it's Tommy John.
I'd say this is closer to Ginn than it was Rocker.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Didn't have a great Tommy John recovery either.
He didn't. He did not have a great Tommy John recovery, but it is closer to Ginn than it is.
At least in terms of, like, things the Mets might do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. This kills me.
At the same time, though, consider how many pitchers in this draft were like first round talents, you know, like top half first round talents, whatever, that now have had Tommy John surgery. I mean, you have or some other similar injury. You know, is this gonna drop Lesko that much? Maybe, I don't know.
It really like
when the entire group of pitchers who are considered the top pitchers are all hurt. Does that basically just say everyone, okay, well, you got a mulligan because there's no guy that is now heads and shoulders above everyone else?
I mean, but we're not even we haven't talked about those guys in this time. Right. Like, no one has talked. No one wants them.
Yeah.
And frankly, that might be a better argument against drafting Lesko, right? If at the start of this process, 12 months or 15 months ago, whatever, there were four or five top-level arms or three, however many, and Lesko was the last one standing and now he's down as well, why should he be higher up than the other guys who all got hurt? If anything, he should almost be lower, right? Because he's a high school arm, not a college arm, and his surgery is later, so it's going to take him longer to get back on the field.
Plus complicating things, he also has a commitment to Vanderbilt.
Getting a discount.
Yeah, like, no, you're not getting him. No. To just kidding. Say, screw it, I will go to college, I'll redshirt, and just rebuild my potential value.
And the Mets The Mets pick is not protected.
Yeah.
Yeah, they really can't. They do not have the rocker ledge of we get the pick next year like they did last year. Like, they have to sign both guys. There's just literally no other option. Mm-hmm.
It'll be a pressure cooker in that draft room.
There are enough college players I like in this range, and it really hates me to say this because in years past I would have totally been pounding the table for Lesko. In fantasy, I'm going to go draft Lesko everywhere, but like, there are enough college hitters in this range that I think they'd be better off taking one of them instead of taking the gamble. Which sucks, but...
Yeah. Well, if nothing else, it makes what is going to be a pretty interesting and fun first night of the draft for the Mets even more intriguing.
Yeah, especially if he's on the board.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, we're going to head to a break, and everybody, I need you to give your thoughts and prayers and whatever to Lucas. He's making some sauce, and he needs to go stir it. So
yes,
good,
I do.
Good luck.
Thanks.
Eating is fun, but why does cooking have to be a hassle? Prepare tasty, healthy, and easy meals on autopilot with Sunbasket. Sunbasket delivers the joy of eating with bold flavors, organic produce, and sustainable seafood and meats. Their award-winning chefs are constantly inventing new recipes, so there's dozens of exciting options to choose from each week. Keep it interesting while winning over picky eaters for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Whatever your dietary needs, Sunbasket makes it simple to eat vegetarian, paleo, and gluten-free. Right now, you can prepare fresh and delicious meals for yourself like lettuce-wrapped turkey sliders with Asian slaw. Set up weekly delivery if you want to keep your meal planning to a minimum, and skip a week whenever you need to. It's delicious and super easy. Right now, Sunbasket is offering $90 off and a free gift when you order. Go to sunbasket.com/Vox and enter promo code Vox at checkout. That's sunbasket.com/Vox and enter promo code Vox.
Ready for your next binge-worthy podcast that can also help you move the needle on social justice and racial equity? Tune in to Heal, Grow, Thrive, the podcast hosted by Ford Promise. For easily digestible conversations with young people, direct service practitioners, leaders in philanthropy, and researchers for a 360-degree view of what healing growing, and thriving can look like in communities of color. Subscribe to Heal, Grow, Thrive, the podcast on your favorite podcast platform, or listen from your computer at forwardpromise.org/podcast.
All right, and we are back. Mission accomplished.
The sauce has been stirred. Nothing was burned. The, $50 or so worth of meat that I got from Arthur Avenue to put in the sauce is all still fine. This is also like 3, 4, or 5 gallons of sauce, so don't worry. I'm getting my money's worth out of this.
All right. Well,
how's it smell, though?
The entire apartment smells like meat and marinara sauce.
Excellent. Excellent
it's, work. Oh, so good. So good.
All right, so April is basically over, and we are going to do a review of the month. We'll do an April report card for all of our top prospects. Very simple, stock up, stock down, holding, or obviously, you know, some kind of other, be it a medical issue or players no longer on the team or whatever the case may be. So first up, Francisco Alvarez. He is currently hitting .292, .375, .667 in 13 games at Binghamton with 4 homers, no steals, a 10.7 walk percentage, and a 28.6 strikeout percentage. Definitely stock up for me.
Yes.
Agreed.
He's really good.
There is a non-zero chance he is the top prospect in baseball at midseason.
Yeah. 2023 Mets DH.
Because Bobby Witt is called up. Julio's Witt, Rodriguez, Torkelson are all going to graduate. Boz is hurt. He's outplaying Luciano and Walker. And then it's really just, can he jump Rutschman? And maybe he can't, but.
Who shouldn't be in the minor leagues?
He's hurt, though, right?
He had a bicep thing. Yeah,
He should Thorin also, and Ken side.
He should also graduate. I don't know if he will, but.
Like, if he's healthy, he'll graduate.
Yeah. I mean, I hope so. But you never know with them.
Mm-hmm. The Orioles are an embarrassment to baseball.
Well, it's sky. In other news, sky's still blue.
Speaking of the Orioles, I finally saw their new outfield wall dimensions last night, like in a game. It's awful. It looks so bad. It looks like a fake stadium in a video game.
I mean, they are kind of a fake team, so.
He's not actually outperforming. No, has Riley Green played?
He got hurt.
Oh, well. Okay.
Riley Green, he was going to make opening day, and he...
They got hurt?
He took a foul ball off his foot or something. Like, he hurt his foot. I know that. I remember that, because I was going to draft him. And he broke his foot or something, and he's going to be out. He was out for, like, 2 months. He's going to be on the Tigers, though. Like, they wanted him to break camp like Torkelson did, and he got hurt.
Just the other name that was ahead of Alvarez on BP's 101.
All right, number two, now Brett Beatty. He is hitting .310, .375, .483 in 16 games with Binghamton, with 1 homer, no steals, a 6.3 walk rate, and a 31.3% strikeout rate. Got to say, stock up.
Yep.
You can make the case. You could definitely make a case, and I was thinking very, very heavily about it, about stock holding. Because
it might be stock holding for me.
Yeah, I'm going holding. Because that's more strikeouts, but no additional power, and he's hitting the shit out of the ball, so it's not entirely unearned, but most of his offense is coming from a .460 BABIP right now.
I think it evens out, but right now, if we're going to say, like, if we're doing stocks, I'm holding for now.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not down on him by any means, but he's not making the improvements I wanted him to make yet.
Number three, Ronny Mauricio. He's currently hitting .293, .328, .517 in 14 games of Binghamton with 2 homers, 3 stolen bases, a 3.3 walk rate, and a 29.5% strikeout rate. I'm giving him a stock up.
He's performing. It doesn't.
It's, I don't, right.
The same I don't shit.
Like,
but
I don't like how it looks, but he's hitting. It's just one of those things where that's going to get exposed, I think.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Like, I had to give him a stock up slightly just because I was so low on his stock in the first place. But I mean, I bet if we could pull his Statcast numbers, it would not be pretty in terms of chase rate and contact rate in the zone and all those things.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's just the swing decisions and it's all that combined into it's stock up for me. I agree, because the numbers aren't lying. Like, that's what he's hitting. But
it's giving me like major Amed Rosario vibes, where he was kind of just treading water. Then he got to Binghamton and he has his great season. Everything spikes. And then, you know, we know the rest of the story of Amed Rosario.
I mean, I'm not trying to victory lap anything here. At least to me, it was like, okay, the stats are good. Now, as I go to victory lap, the stats were good, but the approach still sucked. Like, nothing ever changed. And Javier Baez makes this work, but Javier Baez was in a 70 or 80 grade athlete with 80 raw power. Ronnie Mauricio is a nice athlete with good raw power, but he's not Javier Baez.
You don't want to be like, oh, prospect, be like Javier Baez.
Yeah, not a good process.
Because he's one of one. Like, watching him as a Met, even for like just 2 months, and he was good as a Met, don't get me wrong. But it was like, watching him, I was just like, he's the only dude on this planet who could play baseball the way he does at a high level. Like, everyone else would do that and be like hitting 200 or like 190, and sometimes he does that too, but like,
yeah,
he does it in a different way, and it's the fielding, and he's a different breed. Like, you don't want your guys to be like him, because he's one of one, in my opinion.
Right, number four, Mark Vientos. He is currently hitting 167, 246, 315 in 16 games at Syracuse, with one homer, no stolen bases, and an 8.2% walk percentage, and a 34.4% strikeout percentage. Stock down, but this is nothing new for Vientos, who is always a stock down early in the season.
Man, I'm terrified for him with Velo, but stock down.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is the level we always said it might fail.
Yeah, this is the big one for him. I'm curious to see if he gets over his slow start like he always does. Right,
that's going to be the big test, like, 3 weeks from now.
Can he report to spring training with, like, the pitchers and catchers and get a month head start on everyone, maybe?
It's wild. Even, like, in the seasons where I think he's going to be good. Like,
yeah, he did this last year, too. He was awful. And then said, oh, just kidding. Call an ambulance, but not for my stat line.
Not for me.
All right, number five, Matthew Allen. He's still recovering from Tommy John and ulnar transposition surgery, so he's a medical hold.
I hope I don't see you pitch this year, Matthew.
I mean, he could.
I just think that's not worth it, you know?
I hope he does in the back half.
He'll make those two marquee Brooklyn, you know, one inning appearances in September.
He becomes their closer for like a month.
Number six, JT Ginn. Obviously, he was traded, but for whatever it's worth, he has a 4.26 ERA in 12.2 innings with the Midland Rockhounds, Oakland's Double A team, with 9 hits allowed, 4 walks, and 17 strikeouts. So he's doing okay.
Thank you for Chris Bassett, who is very good.
Yes.
Zero qualms about trading JT Ginn.
Nope. Number seven, Khalil Lee. He is currently hitting 116, 269, 140 in 13 games at Syracuse with no homers, 5 stolen bases.
Yeah.
17.3% walk rate, but a 38.5% strikeout rate.
Yeah, well, I'll be jumping out the window now. Thank you.
He's a three true outcomes player: walks, strikeouts, and stolen bases.
Yeah, pretty much.
5 steals is pretty wild for like.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
But everything else is he's just not hitting the ball.
No.
I know.
It could be so much fun if it works.
I know.
Fuck. It's still time. Number eight, Nick Plummer. He's currently hitting 241, 343, 448 in 8 games at Syracuse with 2 homers, a stolen base, a 5.7 walk percentage, and a 25.7% strikeout rate. I would say his stock is holding.
It's a hold for me.
Yeah.
He hasn't really played too much.
He's been up and down playing, like, he was on the taxi squad, and he had a few games in Queens when there was COVID stuff, and then he went back down. It's been weird for him. It's been a weird month for him, so.
He hit his third homer last night, I assume was after Steve compiled these stats, so.
Yes.
Basically the same overall line.
But just extra homer.
I like him.
Yeah, he's going to have some more time in Queens, I'm assuming. Like, just guys don't stay healthy for 162. That's not life. Mm-hmm. And he's going to be the first guy up, especially with Lee just not hitting the ball at all. I don't think we see him.
Yeah.
No. It's going to be hard to, unless he just hits like 400 from now on, you know, it's going to be hard to convince the Mets to just not let him sit in AAA and figure it out.
Number 9 is Alexander Ramirez, and he's currently hitting .371, .427, .516 in 16 games with St. Lucie. 15 games with St. Lucie. No homers, a stolen base, a 5.9% walk rate, and a 17.6% strikeout rate. Stock way
up. This is, hit the ball in the air more, but stock up.
Oh, my God, please. I've been tracking all of the StatCast data. I'll send you guys, because now that the month is over, I'll send you guys. But he's averaging, 93% exit velo. Something to that effect. And averaging, launch angle is a weird thing to do, but I mean, it is a statistic. However much value that statistic has, that's up to debate. But he's averaging a 2-degree launch angle, which is
not. We call that the Eric Campbell.
Yes, yeah. Thomas beat me by 1 second.
I was waiting up because as soon as Steve said that to us before, I was like, oh, Eric Campbell. Mm-hmm. Okay.
He has a very high batting average. So, he's hitting the ball on the ground and it's getting by the fielders.
Oh, yeah, because he's smoking the ball.
He's stinging it, yeah, but it just, man, once he figures out things a little bit more,
that's something. Yeah, if he starts hitting the ball in the air with that exit, with that amount of, raw exit velo off his bat, that's going to be interesting.
Yep. All right, number 10 now, Jalen Palmer. He's currently hitting .135, .289, .189 in 12 games with Brooklyn with no homers, 3 stolen bases, an 11.1% walk rate, and a 48.9% strikeout rate. Not good.
I am out.
It's only 12 games, but I might be out. I might be starting to get out too.
I'm not out, but it's just man, come on, dude. You're better than this.
Yeah, I really like him and I really want it to succeed, but he just hasn't hit in Brooklyn ever. And this is his second go round at Brooklyn, right?
He spent about a third of the year last year.
So, I mean, I won't call it a second. You know what I mean?
He's been exposed to those kinds of pitchers.
And it's to start this slow after repeating, to start at the same place you ended with is worrying for me.
Yep.
Hey, maybe he'll pull a Shervy and Newton and in 2 years go back down to A-ball and figure it out. Shervy and Newton's still striking out 30% of the time. He hasn't figured it out.
He's hitting the ball hard, though, right?
Yes. I mean, he's hitting the ball hard.
All right, next up is number 11, Hayden Senger, and he is currently hitting .231, .318, .410 in 12 games at Binghamton with 1 homer, 1 stolen base, a 6.8 walk percentage, and a 27.3 strikeout percentage. That is a slight stock down for me.
Yeah, I'm fine with that.
I'll say hold. Especially because he's in the weird timeshare with Alvarez, which is probably not the best for Sanger's development.
Yeah, I don't really know why he's there.
It's really weird.
It's so odd. It's so odd. I guess because they're DHing Alvarez a fair bit, so
The thing is, I can understand that, and I can understand also it's cool to have another catcher who's defense oriented working with Alvarez to help Alvarez. That's cool. But you have Nick Meyer in AAA who's having a good season, but he's less valuable than Senger is. You could just flip flop them. Give Senger more playing time. You have a pretty solid defensive-oriented catcher helping Alvarez where he needs help. Like,
yeah, I they feel it feels like they should be switched, and Sanger should be catching every day in Syracuse. Also, like, if something happens to Nito, like, theoretically, Sanger's your third catcher. I mean, I know it's Mizika because they adore him, but theoretically, it should be Sanger coming up, and he's in Binghamton in a timeshare. You know, like, it's just it feels so weird. And like, Nito, I think he's close to being a free agent. Like, Sanger might be a guy who should be replacing him internally, but if you're not doing that because he's in Double A, you know, like, it's just very strange to me their handling of Sanger this year.
Agreed.
I think it says what they think about him, though. Not protecting him in the Rule 5 and then making him out as his backup. Like, I think that sends pretty clear messages that they don't think he is one of their top prospects, even though industry-wide he's a top 10 to 12 guy.
Next up, number 12, Calvin Ziegler. He currently has a 3.07 ERA and 14.2 innings over four starts to St. Lucie, with four hits allowed, nine walks, and 26 strikeouts. He gets a stock up.
Yep, he's a perfectly good pitching prospect.
He was real good last night.
Yeah, he was, right?
Yes.
Three hitless innings or something?
4.1 innings, one hit, and 9 or 8 strikeouts.
Mm-hmm.
I should know because I did the report yesterday, and it's already left my brain. 9 strikeouts, nine. Yes.
Yeah.
Look, he wasn't supposed to be their top pick, but he sure looks pretty freaking good. And we heard, like, there were whispers about him looking real good on the backfields and all that, so.
Yeah, I mean, he's performing as, I don't want to say, he's performing better than advertised, I guess, so far, so. It's what you want to see.
We don't have the stat cast on him, do we?
We
or
do.
Or should, because it's St. Lucie. Okay, yes. Go take a peep at that at some point.
I mean, he's been averaging about 94 with the fastball, touching 97, which is good. I could pull it up here.
You don't have to do it in the middle of the pod here, but I'll hit you up for that afterwards.
Yeah, no, like I said, I'll send everybody the document once the month is over completely. But there's some good stuff there, folks. Definitely some good stuff. Number 13, Eric Orsi. Maybe not so much good. 11.05 ERA and 7.1 innings over 6 appearances out of the Syracuse bullpen. 7 hits allowed, 4 walks, and 12 strikeouts.
It's only 7 innings, but damn, he's just getting lit up. I mean, he goes out at this point.
I would say hold because, you know, just 6 appearances or whatever, but he is getting hit hard. You know, he is still striking people out, which is good. He's not, like, going crazy with the walks. But it's just, you know, it's a down for me because those hits are, like, hard hits.
Yeah, he's getting lit up. It's a down. Like, he could salvage it easily and be fine. It could just be a little bit, like, he's struggling early in the season. But that doesn't mean it's not a down right now.
Mm-hmm. Number 14, Jake Mangum. He's currently hitting 189, 259, 340 in 13 games at Binghamton with one homer, one stolen base, 8.6% walk rate, and a 31% strikeout rate. That's down.
Yeah, it's got to be.
Especially because, I mean, he spent the entire season in Binghamton last year, so you should
not be. Yeah, that's
rough. Yep.
Next up, 15, Adam Oller. Obviously, he was traded. For what it's worth, Oakland gave him a spot in the rotation, and he made the majors. So, I mean, I guess in that sense, it's a stock up for him. But he hasn't been good. He has an 11.17 ERA in 9.2 innings, with 15 hits allowed, 8 walks, and 8 strikeouts over 3 starts. So, but we got Chris Bassett.
Yeah. Is it weird that I was more annoyed about giving up Oller than Gin, whichever?
I think so. A lot of people in
the... I was pretty down on Gin.
A lot of people, yes, were very down. I mean, I didn't get it. Oller is like the throw-in piece, whereas Gin is the prospect. But a lot of people saw Oller, you know, having a pop in velocity and an improved slider and... Gin recovering from Tommy John and having the inverse, a little bit less velocity, and his pitches are less crisp, and we're flip-flopping in value. But in the long run, I think Ginn is the much better pitcher, but we'll see.
Yeah, the Mets got Chris Bassett.
Exactly, that's what matters. All right, number 16, Dominic Hamill. He currently has a 4.66 ERA in 9.2 innings over three starts with St. Lucie. He's allowed 12 hits, he's walked 5, and he struck out 12. For me, this is a stock holding.
I agree. As someone who made a bold prediction about him, this is about what I'd expect from him as a starter. He's a guy I'd put in the bullpen sooner rather than later. The Mets clearly disagree.
I think that's where he ends up, though.
Right, and he's older, so I don't understand why you're wasting time with a 23-year-old. But whatever. I mean,
like I was saying to Ken last week when I was looking at his data, I feel like right now this is just a learning period because he's throwing 6 different pitches in you know his games. A starting pitcher, unless you're Yu Darvish, unless you're King Felix, you don't need to throw that many pitches. I think right now they're just seeing what he has, seeing what works in the major leagues, and at some point in the future they'll say, okay, stop throwing all this stuff. These are the things that we've identified as good. Focus on these things, and then he will be better from that point on. But that's just my hypothesis right now.
Brandon Webb used to throw 7. Brandon Webb
I think
would like
Bassett throws a lot of pitches too.
Brandon Webb would like randomly drop in a knuckleball every now and then as like a normal ass pitcher.
We need to normalize that.
Oh, he was so freaking good. It's a shame his shoulder gave out.
Yeah, he was really good.
Alright, number 17, Jose Buhdo. He has a 3 ERA in 18 innings over 4 starts at Binghamton. He's allowed 14 hits. He's walked 6. And he struck out 26. I'm going to give him a holding.
He's a hold. He is who he is for me.
Really?
I mean, this is basically what he did last year. So,
yeah
at the same level.
But he's showing he can do it again. Look, at the risk of falling into the the bucket of casual Twitter Met prospect guy who loves everyone.
Don't be a filthy casual, Lucas.
I have an eyebrow raised. I am intrigued that he's this
like,
again. This is stock up for me.
We ranked him 17. I think it's a good spot for him, especially given the mishmash that, you know, someone who's ranked 17 could just as easily be ranked, you know, 12 in this system as it was composed last year. He's a solid pitcher. I think that there's a future for him, possibly as a major leaguer, but I'm just saying it's a hold because he's not showing that he's done anything different. He's just continuing over 18 innings, the same kind of numbers that he put up last year against AA competition, doing the same stuff. Only now it's 2022 instead of 2021. It's good and it's useful to see that he can still do it this year and that, you know, the 60 innings or whatever it was that he pitched last year wasn't a fluke. But you know what I mean? Like, I want to see a step taken forward maybe to get a stock up, and he's just kind of doing the same thing. All right, number 18 is Josh Walker. He is currently injured, so it's a stock holding for him, medical reasons. Number 19, Thomas Zupacki, and he currently has a 3.38 ERA in 8 innings over 3 starts at Syracuse with 8 hits allowed, 3 walks, and 15 strikeouts.
I want to believe.
I'm going to give him a stock up just because,
he stayed healthy.
To believe. 2019 prospect guy Lucas is super excited right now. Thomas Zupacki is striking out 17 per 9 in AAA. There's probably nothing to it.
Yeah, we'll see.
Yeah, who knows?
Go ahead. Get more innings, but
yeah, I'm okay with being careful with it, though. Like,
but if they're gonna be careful with it, then just pick what they want to do. If they say, "Well, we don't want him to throw enough, too many innings, so let's just put him in the bullpen. Let's make him our closer. Let's make him a something or other." Like,
I mean, that's what they should do, I think. But
closer Thomas Zupacki would be very fun.
Just something, you know. But I mean, it is also a month into the season. He literally just has 8 innings, so maybe they'll figure something out a couple of weeks from now.
Mm-hmm.
All right, 20, Brian Maguire. And he has a 9.53 ERA in 5.2 innings over 5 appearances of Binghamton, with 5 hits allowed, 6 walks, and 9 strikeouts. He is a stock down for me.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah.
I just would like to have seen more. I mean, we know he's going to give up hits. We know he's going to give up a ton of walks. I would prefer to have seen more strikeouts than just 9 in 5.2 innings. But
with his stuff, he should be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, 21, Junior Santos. And he currently has a 8.03 ERA and 12.1 innings over 4 starts of Brooklyn, with 18 hits allowed, 10 walks, and 11 strikeouts. Unfortunately, this is a down, stock down. And as the conductor of the train, I am I'm slowly pulling into the station here. Getting the bags ready.
I mean, he's a guy who wouldn't have been a top 25 guy in like a slightly better season system, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so.
Just tall, projectable pitcher without any other determinable skills.
Yeah, that's a guy who every other system has 8 of them.
Being tall is a skill.
Is it, though? Yes. I think it might actually be an active detriment now in the era, now that we actually like, this is something we said about Noah Syndergaard for you. Like, oh, big, strong guy, tall, he's going to throw his fastball up in the zone and get whiffs. And now the science is more, well, if you have a lower release slot but can get rise in your fastball, that's actually better. I don't know that being tall is as much of an advantage as we've characterized it as for years.
I mean, maybe it's not a skill, but maybe it's not a positive, beneficial thing, but it's a skill, okay? You can't mm-hmm. teach that, all right? Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I mean, he's just – everything that he's allowing is being hit hard. He's walking tons of guys, and he's not striking them out. It's just – and this is all happening in Brooklyn where, you know, Brooklyn does Brooklyn things, so.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. He's just been, like, in that same area, I feel like, forever.
Yeah, like, there's been no progression, unfortunately.
And he's getting lit up now, and it's like, every other year, it's like, well, he was super young, and you can excuse it, and well, he was super young, and you can excuse it, but at some point, he's not super young anymore. Like, he's still younger than, he's still plenty young, don't get me wrong, but.
Right, he is younger than average, but he's at a point where he should have things developed more.
Like, experience-wise, he's not. Yeah. You know what I mean? I don't know.
It's just not great. Not good.
Yeah.
Speaking of not good, number 22, Travis Blankenhorn. He is currently hitting 196, 233, 393 in 16 games for Syracuse, with 3 homers, 2 stolen bases, a 5% walk rate, and a 30% strikeout rate.
Ooh.
Oh.
So, yeah. It's bad.
Yeah. All my guys I liked in AAA are bad.
It's one of those years.
Do you like Carlos Cortez? Because
why don't you take a guess at that, Steve? Do I like Carlos Cortez?
Does anyone like Carlos Cortez? Well, he is currently hitting 179, 258, 286 in 17 games to Syracuse, with 1 homer, no steals, an 8.1 walk percentage, and a 19.4 strikeout percentage. I mean, honestly, it's looking at the underlying numbers. I mean, an 8.1 walk and a 19.4 strikeout. It's not terrible.
No, it's not.
There are certainly guys. It might be the lowest strikeout rate on this entire list.
Yeah.
But we don't like Carlos Cortez.
No, I mean, he's going to get major league time, and it's going to be annoying.
I believe he is technically a friend of the podcast, though, so.
Well, he ain't no friend of mine. Number 24, Levi David. He has currently rocking a perfect 0 ERA over 5 innings, 4 appearances with St. Lucie. He's allowed 1 hit, he's walked 6, and he struck out 9. So, for me, it's a stock holding. Mm-hmm. Just because I would want to see more strength. He should be getting more strikeouts.
Yeah, at that level?
Yep, yes. I agree.
How old is he? Do you have that on hand?
He's a little older, I
23,
think.
I think.
That's what I thought, right? Yeah. He's a little older, too? Yeah. So he should be doing, like, he should be dominating a little bit. It's funny to say that about a guy with a zero ERA. But, like, he should be, like...
He should have a negative ERA.
He should be striking more people out. You're right. And
excuse me, he's 22. He'll be 23 in June.
Okay. And last,
yeah, I like him. Don't get me wrong, but
exactly. Yeah. Last but not least is Robert Dominguez, coming in at 25, and he had surgery back over the winter, so he hasn't played, and that's a medical hold. So suffice to say, from the top 25, the little could be doing better. Have there been some other players that are not in the 25 that have caught your guys' eyes?
Can I? Yes, I like Keyshawn Askew quite a bit at this point. I'm very the dude just keeps coming out of the bullpen and blowing people away for five innings. I would like them to promote him.
It's fun. It's Askew.
Yes, yes, I've made like 17 puns about this in three different farm reports. The readers must be getting very fed up with me at this point.
And we have like 5 years to go.
And frankly, I'm, again, getting back to that vertical attack angle thing, I'm more intrigued by sidearmers than I used to be. He's another guy I'd actually like to dig into the StatCast data about. But he's currently, in 16 innings, he has struck out 20 batters. Mm-hmm. And walked three.
Yeah,
he's way too good for St. Lucie. They need to promote him.
Yeah, he's too good there.
The control is surprising.
Yeah. Because what's his average fastball sitting at?
91.
Okay, so the velocity gains from the spring haven't totally helped, but...
I mean, suppose, you know, how the Mets go.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see, his fastball is averaging... 90, let's see, 89.9. Yeah, it's about 90.
Mm. Still intriguing.
I think from that angle, 90
he's a right, he's a left-hander. He is throwing from a very funky sidearm angle, and it's really more of a sinker than it is a fastball, so it's getting that additional, you know, sink and run on it. So
yeah.
Definitely... a guy who has some helium here in the system right now.
And he, like, if you're going to make him a pure reliever, which I think they should, like, he could kind of a little quick here, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not saying this year, but like a full-blown reliever who's a college, he was a college arm. Like, it's not like you really have to keep him down at these levels to develop him. Like, you could be a little aggressive with that profile.
He could end the season in Binghamton, and nobody would find that weird.
And then he's in the like offhanded conversation spot for a bullpen role next year, especially with, I mean, the only reliever under contract next year is John Curtis. Like, you know, like it's a fluid bullpen next year. Like that's probably won't stick. And I wouldn't be surprised if they extend some guys that they have in house. I guess Drew Smith is also under contract, but you know what I mean? But like, Edwin Diaz is the one that comes to mind. I wouldn't be surprised if they extend him, but like, there's a lot of spots for him next year, and there's no real lefties even now. Like the lefties are Chasen Shreve and Jolie Rodriguez, and they're easy extendable guys, but also you can use another one too. Like there's no reason not to give them a competition with a guy like Askew. And if they win out, then Askew goes to AAA and he's the first guy up when you need him. So.
Any other names you guys have kind of popped for you?
Was mine. I mean,
so far it's just been so bad. like the system has really struggled this year. Yeah. And that shows in its players. Like I can't really think of off the top of my head, I can't really think of when I would have to like look into it.
I still think Mike Vassell's semi interesting, but
yeah. Vassell's
more in like I think he's gonna be like a middle reliever someday.
Mm-hmm.
Both the college guys are in similar boats. I feel like the Mets are just kind of seeing what sticks right now.
Right. There's another name. There's like a random pitcher that was getting some buzz on Twitter, and the name is escaping me right now. It wasn't anyone of particular note, so. I wish the Mets. This draft should be fun. Hopefully, we get some a more interesting system out of it.
Yeah, we have two old friends. Go ahead.
I was talking to my friend about the Mets system, and basically, I was like, they could get two top five prospect guys in their system in July, and I wouldn't be surprised. Like, and I looked at the list, and I was like, yeah, easily. Like, we could be talking about two guys who slot into the top five, and if they play their cards right, and Mauricio is what he is, you might get a top three out of one of them, you know.
Two old friends, Shervian Newton and Stanley Consegra, they are both getting off to pretty good starts. Consegra is hitting .279, .329, .397 in 70 games to St. Lucie, with a homer, a stolen base, a 5.5 walk rate, and a 34.2 strikeout rate. So cooling off a little bit, but he started at the beginning of the season pretty hot, and similar to Alex Rodriguez, he's hitting the ball pretty hard, which is nice to see, even if it's not really translating too well in his batting line. Shervian Newton, .281, .364, .491 in 17 games in St. Lucie, one homer, no stolen bases, 10.6% walk rate, and a 28.8% strikeout rate. He's a little old, but it's nice to just see him having... He has life.
Yeah.
I don't know what becomes of him going forward, but there are finally some returns on the Newton.
Another guy I want to believe in.
Yeah. And one guy that's pretty underrated. He's not really getting a lot of talk, and... He's performing pretty well in a situation that you don't see too many guys in. Wyatt Young, who was drafted last year.
He's an interesting guy.
He was sent to Syracuse. You know, he was drafted last year, and they sent him to Syracuse this year because they just needed some bodies. In 11 games, he's currently hitting .333, .469, .410. No homers, no walks. No homers, no stolen bases. An 18% walk rate, and a 16% strikeout rate.
How did I miss this guy? I love the walk demons.
He's extremely, like, I don't want to say Luis Guillorme-like, because Guillorme definitely has more pop than him, but, like, he's just a funny guy in that he makes a lot of contact, and it's all, like, singles, and he plays defense. Like, he's just, like, an old-school ass
player.
Can we
get Nick Madrigal? We have Nick Madrigal at home.
Yeah. And, like, if he's a utility guy for you who just, like, bounces around the infield, because I think he plays the outfield too, right, Steve? Like, he did a little bit in college. Am I remembering that correctly?
No, he's only second base, a little third, but primarily shortstop.
Yeah. So, like, if he's a second base, shortstop, third base guy who could hit, who has good bat-to-ball skills, then, like, that's a perfectly fine infielder to have around. Mm-hmm. As a fifth infielder, not really a fourth, but.
Yeah. I mean, he's 22, you know, almost 5 years younger than the league average in Syracuse, which is full of, you know, grizzled veterans and everything. No, it's pretty crazy to see a guy just kind of jump into a spot like that and really take over. It's nice to see. It's good to see some good stories coming out of the system for a change. And he's Hawaiian, and the Mets have a long history of Hawaiian players, of course.
He had a few at-bats in spring training, too, so that's pretty cool.
That's right, yeah, he was, 2-for-4 with a double. Not bad.
In three seasons at Pepperdine, he hit .319, .377, .387. So,
Jesus.
That's the type of hitter he is. And that's fine. Like, it's a nice little... It's a nice little role player to have, a nice little bench bat. But
yep.
More utility infielder than bench bat, but you know what I mean, especially in a DH world.
So obviously, system could be better. There are some bright spots, but on the whole, it's more dross than anything good. But you know what? That just means that there's more time for players to heat up and do good. So, perfect. All right, well, if anyone has any questions, comments, whatever, you can send us an email at our email address from complextoqueens@gmail.com. You could follow us on Twitter and shoot us questions there. I'm at Steve Saipa. Lucas is at ElvLahos343. Ken is at Ken1191. Thomas is at ZedMetSeason, S-Z-N. Subscribe to the podcast wherever you get podcasts from. Rate and review it. And, of course, we thank you for listening. So we will be back next week. So until then, love the Mets. Love the Mets.